Cable Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of BikeCraft, Saturday and Sunday, December 12th and 13th at Bike Farm in Portland. BikeCraft features handmade gifts that support bike culture as well as food, drink, and music. Again, that's BikeCraft, Saturday and Sunday, December 12th and 13th, from 11 to 6 both days at Bike Farm, 1810 Northeast 1st Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at cable.fm. On the right side of the homepage, under Community Events. Cable Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Hats for the Homeless donation drive. From December 1st through the 15th, 5 Southeast locations will collect clean, new, or gently used hats, scarves, and gloves, and the folks at Zippity News will distribute them to local shelters. Dropbox locations and more information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
The time is 6 p.m. and you're listening to KBOO Portland. Coming up next is Labor Radio, followed by Prison Pipeline at 6:30, followed by Hard Knock Radio at 7, so stay tuned. This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from BPP Insurance, working to assist individuals throughout Oregon with open enrollment process through healthcare.gov. Information on how PBP Insurance can help is available at 503-223-3638 or enroll online at EnrollNowOregon.com.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Good evening and welcome to Labor Radio. This is Jamie Partridge, your host tonight, and our show will feature interviews with Chloe Udale of That's a Goddamn Shed, a Facebook page dealing with the housing crisis in Portland, Joe Clement from the Portland Tenants United, and Mike Heyer from the United Steelworkers out on the picket line in where steelworkers have been locked out in Albany. Jamie Partridge, Labor Radio. I'm sitting here with Chloe Udale. Is that right?
Udale.
Oh, okay. Udale, who is the owner of Reading Frenzy, which is a small shop on Mississippi Avenue that specializes in Indian self-published magazines, books. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Comics, all, zines, all sorts of stuff.
And Chloe runs a Facebook page called That's a Goddamn Shed, which is about our housing crisis in Portland. And I was interested in putting her on Labor Radio because I'm actively involved in the struggle to bring wages up with the 15 Now campaign. And she's in the struggle to control or bring down the price of housing. Wages up, housing down. So, Chloe, tell us a little bit about this Facebook page. That's a Goddamn Shed.
Okay. Earlier this year, there was a Craigslist ad making the rounds on Facebook for a tiny home in the heart of Hawthorne, $950. It was 165 square feet, and it was actually a finished shed. And if you break that cost down per square foot, that's more expensive than an apartment in Paris. So I started this group, That's a Goddamn Shed, which was a comment a friend of mine made on the Craigslist ad, as a place to kind of gather these obscene rental ads we were seeing more and more, and a place to commiserate about the rising rents. People started making parody ads of their own, some of which they did post on Craigslist, many of which were just posted in the shed, as we affectionately call it. And more people started joining, and over the months it really has become kind of an information clearinghouse for renters' issues and renters' rights, a place for people to commiserate, share their stories, find resources. And we have roughly 1,800 people in the group now. Most of them are Portland or Portland area residents. I'd say the majority of them are cost burden renters who are really facing some huge challenges in this current rental market myself.
So tell us about some of the stories. What are some of the concerns, some of the issues?
Well, I mean, the main issue is that we have unchecked rent increases, growing population, and not enough affordable or even kind of average income housing stock being built. What's being built is, I guess, luxury housing. One of the problems I see in my own situation, my rent has increased 60% in the last 7 years on a small, fairly modest, shabby little rental house. My landlords have made nothing but essential repairs, and those often have taken months or years to be addressed. And they're using these newer builds and remodels as their comps. Well, I'm not living in a in a $400,000 home, but I'm paying the equivalent of a $400,000 mortgage for rent. And I guess that's the main issue. We have rising rents. We don't have wages to support them. And it's just an unsustainable situation.
Are a lot of people also facing no-cause evictions?
Yeah. It's for something that started as a joke, it's actually been pretty heartbreaking to be the moderator, admin of this group, because almost every day I hear from someone who has gotten a 20 or 30% rent increase or a no-cause eviction and has little hope of finding an affordable home in the city. And the, you know, most common response that I see to that, of course, these are comments on the internet, so I want to assume that they represent the lowest common denominator, but it's hard not to believe that the general sentiment is just move, or get a better job, or you should have gone to college or gotten better skills. And none of those are reasonable or helpful responses.
What kind of solutions are people suggesting or proposing or trying to implement?
I think the four things that would help the most is we need to overturn the ban on mandatory inclusionary zoning and give municipalities the tool of inclusionary zoning if they choose to use it. We need to...
Why don't you explain what inclusionary zoning is for our listeners?
So mandatory inclusionary zoning means that a city or municipality could tell a developer who wants to build, say, a 100-unit apartment complex that X number of units need to be affordable. And that would be probably somewhere between 60 and 100% of MFI. I'm sure that varies.
Medium family income.
Yeah. The housing crisis is beginning to affect people that do earn median family income. And obviously, the bigger your family, the more of a burden it's going to be.
So what other kinds of solutions are people proposing?
I want to add that we share the distinction of having a ban on inclusionary zoning with one other state, which is Texas. which I think that alone should spur Oregonians to want to overturn it. We also have a ban on rent control, which is more common across the United States. I would support overturning that ban. Rent control is a very unpopular idea among a lot of people. But with this ban in place, we can't even take measures to stabilize rent. And it shouldn't be an all or nothing scenario. The third thing is ending no-cause evictions. And the final issue, well, not the final issue, but the top of my top four is raising the minimum wage, because I just heard on the radio on the way over here that we passed the 4 million mark in Oregon's population, and that we have this thriving, growing economy, and Oregon is, you know, seen as this wonderful place for people to move, yet we have stagnant wages when expenses in most arenas, housing, utilities, food, transportation, have continued to rise. And
so how are you using the Facebook page, or are you using the Facebook page or some other mechanism to help people organize for power to make these things happen?
Like I said, it's become this clearinghouse for information. In addition to renters, we have people that work in affordable housing fields. We have ethical landlords. We have real estate agents who are actually really concerned with this situation, because their, you know, average income clients can't buy houses. They're getting beat out time and time again by investment firms paying cash well above asking, which is another whole separate issue that's somewhat invisible that I'm very concerned about, is that rental housing is one of the few growth markets in this area, and we have Wall Street investment firms and crowdfunding and even foreign investors buying up these properties, and that is definitely contributing to the cost. So I just share useful and relevant information, whether it's about city planning or the way other cities are dealing with their rental or housing crisis. We encourage people to come out for different events. We refer a lot of people to Community Alliance of Tenants. We're very supportive of the efforts of Welcome Home and Anti-Displacement PDX. I mean, there are dozens of organizations working together on this issue and building coalitions. And I've lived in the Portland metro area my entire life. I've lived in Portland proper since 1987. I've never seen the rental market like this, and I've never seen this many people engaged around it. So it's a scary time. It's also an exciting time.
So people want to get involved in the conversation, they can get on Facebook and do what?
Well, you can search That's a Goddamn Shed and request to join.
All right. Thank you, Chloe Udley. That's a Goddamn Shed on Facebook. That was Chloe Udley, housing activist in Portland. Next up, Joe Clement from the Portland Tenants United. You're listening to KBOO Portland. Jamie Partridge, Labor Radio. I'm here talking with Joe Clement of Portland Tenants United. And why don't you tell us, Joe, a little bit about the history of the renters' assemblies and what you've been up to over the last few months?
Well, the Portland renters' assemblies were started back in February by a woman who is not in town anymore, Tori Abernathy. And we had four series of them in February, in May, in July, and then at the end of August. And they were a community forum to talk about people's personal experiences with rent hikes, evictions, and everything in between. Out of that and one of the Facebook groups, PDX Renters Unite, which has formed to discuss these issues and provide kind of an organizing ground of sorts, came the Portland Tenants United Group, which wants to organize tenants in a much more kind of direct action capacity to try to affect changes that have to do with stopping rents from raising, stopping evictions from happening on a no-cause basis or even an illegal basis, and for the establishment of a tenants union. The Portland Tenants United would want to be that union that would help negotiate affairs between tenants and landlords.
So what are the basic demands of the Portland Tenants United at this point, or what are the main issues that folks are focusing on?
No-cause evictions, the rent increases, of course, but also racial discrimination, both on the historic levels and on the very particular level that exists today when people go to apply for a house and they're just not given a call back because of the color of their skin. And there have been studies that have demonstrated that this is why it's happening. In Portland, in upwards of 40 or 50% of respondents are experiencing that. And we want to raise wages, or we want to see wages raised. We don't view ourselves as a special interest. We are one component of a working class movement that includes a fight for higher wages, a fight for control over the places where we live, and a fight for the establishment of services that meet our needs in the city. And so we are focused on housing, but we see ourselves working together across a working class movement.
So are you involved with other organizations? I mean, is Portland Renters United in coalition with other organizations?
We have had organizers from Fight for 15 and from Know Your City come to speak to us about the work that they do, as well as to share their own knowledge that they have about Portland's housing history and its crisis. And we ourselves as individuals have gone, and we have not been asked to formally support a Fight for 15 action or demand, but it's certainly something that we would consider and probably say yes to.
A previous speaker, Chloe Udalay, spoke with me about inclusionary zoning as a solution to the housing crisis. What do you think about that as a solution?
I think that it is a component. I would hesitate to call it the solution and be so definitive. We need more housing. There is a literal shortage for houseless folks, and then there's just a shortage that means that people have less flexibility when they have to move. But when we talk about the crisis of affordable housing, the majority of people who need affordable housing already have housing. And really, we need to filter how we talk about their needs through the conversation around rent control, which is about controlling the rent prices from going above a certain level. There are some who want to make the distinction and advocate for what's called rent stabilization, which is the same thing for a single tenant, but in San Francisco and in some other jurisdictions, what real estate and landlord lobbyists are able to get out of rent control legislation is the right to raise rents between vacancies. And so you still see rents jumping up, and this is why people say rent control doesn't work, but really what you're seeing is the market in action. Rent control works where rent control exists.
And so what is the Portland Tenants United pushing for in particular, or what are you suggesting a rent control law would look like in Portland, and how does it relate to what the political climate, or what's possible in Oregon, or what other your jurisdictions are trying to accomplish?
I think that in the short term, because I do not have a rent control policy in my back pocket right now, and that's a conversation that I would be very suspicious of if it didn't include a lot more people. But what we can be doing in the short term is demanding that city council take action like Seattle did just in September to formally request its state legislature to lift the ban that Washington has on rent control. This is the kind of no-nonsense, low-hanging fruit that we have to be working on right now.
And the city council has declared a housing state of emergency. They have passed an ordinance that would extend to 90 days the current 30 or 60 day notice for no cause evictions, and have, I believe, extended to 90 days any rent increases over 5%. What do you think about those moves?
The declaration of the state of emergency around housing is good, and it's good that we are going to be leveraging more resources to help those who are most in dire need of housing, the houseless. But it, I think, evades a major component of the crisis and trauma that this community is experiencing when we are not also straight about how we have so many cost burden renters as well. And a lot of those houseless people are houseless because they got pushed out by skyrocketing rents, discriminatory evictions, or just profit-seeking evictions. And the 90-day increase, or the increase to 90 days for the two different sorts of notices, is a compromise that the city council made with CAT, which wanted a much...
CAT.
The Community Alliance of Tenants, which was demanding a year moratorium on no-cause evictions, in which time I'm sure they'd probably want to pursue the abolition of them, and the institution of a year-long notice for rent increases of 5% or more, which the city, through its lawyers, argued that would constitute something too much like rent control, and therefore the city would get sued. But the reality is that that suit is a technical hassle for some people when what's happening right now is people are kicked out of their homes. People are living on the streets.
So tell us about what the Portland Tenants United is looking forward to. What kind of next steps are you looking at?
Well, we're going to be advocating around going to City Hall during relevant council meetings to advocate around the rent control issue. We are also going to be having a rally in March. Not many details to give you right now because it's a little in the future. And you can find us on Facebook, Portland Tenants United. And we have a regular website external to Facebook that we are getting quite close to releasing too, which we hope will be an organizing tool and not just a dispatch for our particular news. We would hope to have forums where renters can start to educate themselves about what's going on around the city.
Thank you, Joe Clement, Portland Tenants United. This is Labor Radio, KBOO Portland. Next up, we're headed to Albany. Jamie Partridge with Labor Radio. I'm down here in Albany, Oregon, on the steelworkers picket line with a bunch of folks from Jobs with Justice come down from Portland. They're going to feed us some chili. But first of all, let's talk with Mike Heyer. What's your position with the Steelworkers Union?
I'm just a member now, past vice president.
And so tell me the story of this local and what's happened here.
Our contract expired the 30th of June, and we were able to work on the past contract up until the 14th of August when the company decided they were going to lock us out. There are 12 companies in six states, roughly 2,200 workers that are locked out currently.
And what's the name of the company again?
ATI, Allegheny Technologies Incorporated.
And what kind of product do you produce?
Specialty metals and steel, stainless steel. They employ roughly 9,000 people worldwide.
And how many people here in Albany?
Three companies in Albany.
But only one of the sites here has been locked out, is that right?
That's correct.
And so how many workers are affected here at this site?
Roughly 175, maybe 180.
You were locked out because you refused concessions that they were demanding?
That was never taken to a vote. They just gave us their best and final offer and would not move from that. What the company is coming after, though, is they want to eliminate future pension, whereas there wouldn't be nothing or anything going in to pension for people that are getting ready to retire. They want to hit us pretty hard with the medical, basically, as I see it, about five times more expense to the employee than what we're currently paying out. Lots of different issues with language. The whole package is just concessionary.
Oh, it's huge concessions. And so the company's been bringing in scabs?
Yes. About a month after they locked us out, they had the company people working, my understanding, 12 hours a day, 6 days a week. And then about...
You mean managers and supervisors?
Yes. And then they brought the scabs in probably 3-4 weeks after that. And my understanding is they're all from out of state. I don't believe that any of these scabs are local people.
Yeah, if they were local people, you might have some influence on convincing them that they shouldn't be breaking your line or replacing. And how long have they've been running these scabs?
The scabs have been here a little more than 2 months. This is something that the company planned way before we even got to the table to negotiate. They bought blockades and fencing to secure their facilities. Then they got with security companies and these scabs. They were all set to go way before our contract expired.
Well, it seems to be a practice by these huge corporations now. In Portland, we just had a year-long lockout on the docks where the longshore were facing the grain companies bringing in scabs from Texas. They'd hired this security company and they ran scabs a whole year. There was a lot of confrontations between the longshore workers and the scabs, but they never managed to prevent them from crossing the line. Of course, the local authorities, the police, of course, would herd them across the line. And these are people that the scabs themselves were trained in security. They also were housed nearby in a local hotel, and every once in a while the longshore would do something to interrupt their going from the hotel into the facility. Has any of that kind of thing happened here in Albany?
I think it's probably pretty much the same. Might even be the same company that's bringing the scabs in. But yeah, that sounds familiar with what we're experiencing.
And what kind of community support have you had here?
Actually, we've had really good community support. I've gone around to several different local businesses, asked to put signs in windows, and gotten a lot of support within the community.
Well, what did the signs say?
Basically supporting the steel workers. Nothing really derogatory, just supporting us.
So I see the picket signs that you've got say Solidarity Steel, USW, Lockout. What does that yellow sign say? Can't read it from here. Oh, an injury to one. Is it injury to all? So you've got pickets at all the entrances to the facility here, and you've got your kitchen set up. What's going on in the kitchen today?
Justin Rosenbaum. He's quite the chef. He specializes in his chili, so he fixed up 3 batches and brought down for everybody on the line to enjoy. Usually every day we have somebody coming down bringing something for the folks to eat.
So I understand that you've been able to collect unemployment because it's a lockout, but that the unemployment benefits could run out. Is that right?
Yes, the unemployment benefits are lasting 6 months. Currently, the legislators or politicians are looking to try to extend that out for us. Hopefully that can happen, but right now, if it doesn't, February, we won't have unemployment.
So the company's probably trying to wait you out and starve you out, right?
That's pretty much a general understanding.
And what can our listeners do to be of support, to be helpful in this cause?
I guess be vocal, be visible that they are supporting us. There's really not a lot more they can do unless they want to come down and walk the picket line with us or, you know, help us out in our endeavors.
So you encourage people to come down and join you on the picket line, and the location is, how would people find you?
We're on 34th Avenue in Albany, Oregon, so if you're coming off the freeway, just stay on 99 West.
All right, and today we've got folks from the Jobs with Justice chapters from all over Oregon. I can see some transit workers got their signs out here. And in solidarity with the steel workers here at the Albany plant that have been locked out since August.
August 14th.
August 14th, yeah. And I've been talking with Mike from United Steelworkers on the picket line locked out in Albany, Oregon. That wraps it up for tonight's Labor Radio show. This Monday and every Monday from 6 to 6:30, the only show of its kind in Oregon or Southwest Washington of the working class, by the working class, for the working class. Thanks to our engineer, Danielle Parks, and stay tuned for Prison Pipeline.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
KBOO Community Radio currently has a one-to-one match for all new and increasing members. A $100 new or increased donation will become $200 to support the important work of KBOO.
If you become a member at this time or increase your donation over last year, your donation will be matched one-to-one by a group of generous donors up to $10,000. Consider becoming a monthly sustaining member. This can be set up easily and securely online. Over 70% of KBOO's income is from you, our listeners, who take action to become KBOO members.
Go to kboo.fm/support to have your donation matched today, or mail your donation to KBOO at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon 97214. Thank you for supporting KBOO.